are listening to the Cleveland Guardians Fancast, hosted by Quincy Wheeler and friends, a podcast about the Cleveland professional baseball team and its fans.
Welcome to the Guardians Fancast, Guardians Party Line, and this is our penultimate episode before the season's over, because they're not going anywhere, obviously. The Twins are destroying whoever they're playing, and the Guardians are getting destroyed by the Royals. Not that they had a shot anyway, but here we are. We're talking about Guardians baseball and life in general. Mike, how are you doing?
Hey, girl. Are you the Kansas City Royals? Because I sure don't want to see you in the month of September.
Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm not sure how to follow that up.
I don't know. Yeah, well, why are you telling the girl you don't want to see her in the month of September?
She knows.
Allie, how are you?
I'm trying to process what's happening here, but I'm great. It's fun. I'll miss this.
Yeah. Me too. I won't necessarily miss losing to the Royals in September, but everything else I will miss. Greg, how are you?
Fantastic. Doing great.
Good. That's good to hear.
In just a few words.
Well, it's not over yet. They're down 7-4, and I want to sound like Tom Hamilton for a second. What is the official score in Kansas City doing? Like that hit on Naylor
was terrible.
Did you see, miles an hour. What do you guys think about the Jose Ramirez error? That was an awfully difficult play that they determined that the outfielder had made an error on, and scores are especially forgiving for outfielders. Like, it's hard to get an outfielder error. That was a weird one.
Very strange.
He didn't even get a glove on it, did he? It just bounced and then got up in his glove.
It hit his glove, but it hit his glove on the way down.
That thing
had top spin in it. Yeah, it hit it on the way down.
Oh, that's why.
That was not an easy play.
Yeah. I didn't see the replay. I guess if it hit his glove on the way down, they called an error. But yeah, I still don't think it was a normal effort baseball play.
That's because that doesn't mean anything. The rule doesn't mean anything. The whole book doesn't mean anything. It's such a bad rule book.
Yeah, it is. It's more.
I'm not going to do this today, but it's bad.
No. You're right. Go ahead and do it, Mike.
No, it's not the time. There will be a time.
No, don't encourage him. Don't encourage him. But he's right, though. He's right about it. I'm going to get him down that path, I suppose. But I thought about it the other day when Bobby got called for box, and I'm like, yeah, I guess that is kind of a balk, but why the heck haven't we called it ever before now? And anyway, that's boxer about the dumbest rule that you can think of. All right. Well, so right before the podcast started, we were talking about Michael Kelly being knockoff Jordan Luplo, and so that's out there in the blogosphere now.
Yeah, I mean, it may be the beard, it could be the facial hair pigmentation, it could be a lot of things. They both throw hard, allegedly. Jordan Luplo probably got an arm on him. I think it's a fair comparison, and you know, he's also a guy I like seeing play for my baseball team. What of it?
The real Jordan Luplo is available on waivers, right? Couldn't we just get the real one?
Well, the real one would be useful on this team as composed because he hits left-handed pitchers.
Yeah.
2019 Luplo. Oof.
2020 Luplo coming in to pinch hit in the playoffs against a righty. And it worked.
Right, giving you little hints of Brandon Guyer. Sometimes it's easy to forget how great Brandon Guyer was in the World Series. That dude was something else.
That at bat before the Rajay homer was very similar. No one remembers it because it wasn't the Rajay homer, but he fouled off just as many pitches and worked the count, and then he just lined a straight up bullet up the alley. It was amazing.
Yep. Because don't be a left-hander coming in against Brandon Guyer. He's mm-hmm. gonna make your day miserable.
Don't throw just inside because he'll get hit.
Right. Yeah. And don't be Ryan Rayburn on an odd year and face a left-handed pitcher.
Every time anybody says Ryan Rayburn, all I think of is the spike in the outfield. That's just such a funny play.
That was the season in a nutshell. It really need to do a recap.
Such a funny, such a funny play. Yeah. Hey, so I know we don't have a ton to discuss. Matt Moore disappeared. Nice to know you, Matt Moore.
Did they even announce it? Did we find the announcement anywhere?
No. They didn't announce that Michael Kelly came up. We're just like, oh, Michael Kelly, he's in the bullpen.
I found out through Jeff Passan, the Marlins had claimed Matt Moore. I'm like, oh, we got rid of him? When and how?
Well, teams put guys on waivers all the time, I guess. It's just kind of odd that they grabbed him. But I had personally seen enough of Matt Moore pitching. I agree. Felt like he was mostly washed. I mean, he might find it again, but being almost 35, I say this as a 40-year-old, so I know I'm washed, but 35, being almost 35 and not able to really get guys out consistently, I was fine moving on from him. Question for you guys. Tristan McKenzie, he pitched through 60 pitches. It was up and down, but if he's healthy and gets a chance to start, how are they getting him on the roster? Do you think we're going to say adieu to Michael Kelly? Are we going to actually get the end of Cam Gallagher's career here? Or Tanner Bibee on the 60-day? What's that, Andrew?
The question is, what do we there's two questions. What do we think will happen and what do we want to happen? Because I got two different answers to those.
Yeah, I guess I was asking what you think. I assume that we'd all kind of want Cam Gallagher to not have that experience anymore. Or I know what else. You'd also like to have James Karinchak get cut. Yeah, I feel like they're going to hang on to Karinchak.
I'd like to put him in the can and shoot tomorrow.
Watching him pitch is so agonizing every time. I don't know how he makes 20 seconds feel like half an hour, but he does.
You know, I didn't think there was anything like it in sports until last night. And last night showed me what exactly, because that is exactly what Public Enemy number one does in the pocket.
Oh, you're right.
Horrible.
That's a good comparison, really.
Yeah, everyone loves them.
He walked into like three of those. It was amazing.
A magnet for trouble.
In more ways than one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we're going to leave that there. The discussion to Michael Kelly is absolutely getting put down to AAA again or something.
Yeah.
Maybe designated for assignment. Yeah,
we'd have to get a 40-man move for that,
it has
right?
To be a 40-man move, yeah. I just don't know.
It's got to be Michael Kelly, right?
But what's the downside to putting Bibee on the 60-day if you know he's not going to pitch again this season? Why wouldn't they just do that?
Would that carry over to next year?
I don't know if there would be a service time component of that. I know if you do the 60, then he'll get accrued for all the missed time, but I don't know if that's true on the 15-day IL. I would have to look into that. There are other potential reasons why they might not do that, but most of them have to.
I know I'm spiraling on this a little bit, probably unnecessarily, but if we keep Cam Gallagher around to make one or two cute little starts with Shane Bieber, that to me says Shane Bieber is not going to be on this team next year, because at some point homeboy needs to learn how to pitch to Bo. And I just don't know why we couldn't start doing that.
Did he not throw to like Dave Fry once? I hallucinate him having a 5-year career where he like pitched to other real catchers?
Not the real one boys. Clearly the best.
I like Allie Unfiltered here is a good time on the podcast. I'd be surprised if they don't have Bieber throw to Bo once, but we'll see. We'll see. I know that people keep talking about trading Bieber. I just don't see how they're going to get the right kind of value for Bieber. Like, I guess maybe they'll target an Emmanuel Clase out there, but I don't know that anybody's going to make that dumb move again. Oh, we've got a guy who throws 100 miles an hour. The Guardians want him for Shane Bieber, who just had an arm injury. Sure. Yeah, who's going to be able to do that?
Hey, it happened once.
And well, also, I don't want to trade Shane Bieber. You know, we've talked about this before. I love Shane Bieber. I think he's so cool. And I don't want anyone to take that and be like, Ellie, that's stupid, because there's no logic behind it. I just think Shane Bieber's cool, okay?
Nice.
So that's how I feel about that. I don't even know where I was going with this. I'm not going to lie.
I'm
backing you up.
You made good points.
Oh, I don't believe the narrative that Shane Bieber will only pitch to Cam. I believe that he likes it. I believe that Shane has never once said, I only want to pitch to Cam. I think that's coming from someone else.
That's Tito.
Yeah, that's Tito.
I do gotta also find a way believe in. That Tito preferred to have Cam behind the plate over Zunino.
I do believe that.
Understandably.
Well,
because he wants Bieber to bury that curveball. And you need, you know, a somewhat competent blocker, which Cam looked like a god compared to Zunino. You know?
And Bo looks like a god compared to Cam.
And I think Tito, just being who he is, you know, he's got his guys. And so, you know, Cam became Bieber's guy behind the plate, and he just kind of stuck with it.
Bo is just a god, period, Mike. He's good at baseball. I love that kid. I was watching on game day. Sometimes I'll watch the game and I'll look on game day to see that ahead of what's going to happen. And I saw the ump call one of Karinchak's curveballs a strike that was obviously not a strike. And I'm like, oh man, I'm going to watch this frame job. And it was excellent. It was an excellent frame job. He managed to make it look like a strike and got the strike on it.
If he learned that from some combination of Mike Zunino and Cam Gallagher or Austin Hedges last year, then it was worth having them around, because right. We have 4 or 5 years of Bo Naylor doing these things and being competent at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Get him a full offseason working with Sandy, too. He'll be even better next year.
I think it's helped with his fundamentals behind the dish. Blocking the first few weeks he was up wasn't very good. He's really good now.
Yep.
I'm so glad Buck's better than the player we kind of expected, because he's really taken off the last month, and it's been fantastic to watch, and feels good to have a catcher. Not only do we have a catcher for a long time, he's pretty good behind the plate. He's got the third highest slugging percentage on the team right now, behind Jose and his brother. He had like .423 before today. And he's only 23 years old. So, like, he's going to have a long career.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I would say he's definitely been the third best hitter. And for a while there, he was probably their best hitter for a little bit. Josh Naylor was kind of getting back in the groove, and Jose had a rough stretch, and it was Bo Naylor who was pretty much doing anything if the offense was doing anything. So,
from the 8-hole.
Yeah, from the 8-hole. So, guys, I think
Will Brennan just walked, guys. It's an emergency.
Yeah, what happened to him? He could walk occasionally in the minors, but he's forgetting how to walk in the majors like all year.
It wasn't even occasionally. It was like high single digits, low double digits of walk rates. And it's been gone all year. I think he's been pressing a whole lot.
Miles Straw didn't start tonight. I thought that was notable, because I thought he would start all games in Kauffman, because the outfield's roomy and he tends to start in roomy outfields. So it looks like maybe they are thinking they might move on from Straw, or at least move him to a bench role, and that would be great.
Can we have George Valera up here for a week?
Yeah.
Just 1 week.
They could do it. They could do it. There's nothing stopping them except themselves.
I just want to see him hit a couple major league pitches. That's all.
I assume you guys have seen that Manzardo's had 4 hits of around 100 miles an hour, 2 home runs, and a double tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's looked good. He's really come on the past 2 weeks.
Did we possibly win a trade with the Rays?
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
No, let's not do it.
Savali's been really good too.
Yeah. But we can be win. It can be a win-win. But I do feel positive about it. I think I saw somebody saying, I don't know if it was Hiram, because I was going on a kick of looking at Hiram takes. Don't look at Hiram likes, but Hiram takes. Thing that I think he said something to anybody who thinks the Guardians are going to run with like seven left-hand hitters in their lineups is an idiot. It made me want to go with nine lefties in the lineup. Just give me the all lefty lineup. We'll just absolutely crush every right-hander, and then we'll just squeak out occasional victories against left-handers, and let's ride.
Let's pause that, though, because if you think about it, you can have one right-handed hitter in that lineup as long as that right-handed hitter is Gabriel Arias, who doesn't hit left-handed pitching. Right. So you really just have nine lefties, but one of them is batting right-handed, if that makes sense.
But I pretty much consider Arias the left-handed hitter because he can't hit left-handers.
It's brutal.
And most of his home runs this year have been the opposite field.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to watch him get that opposite field power. He's clearly got, like, he's so strong.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, Homer just kept going. Like, I thought it was a double when it first was off the bat, and it just kept going.
Yeah, he really has authority to the opposite field. Not easy to have.
I think they're going to hand him the keys to the shortstop spot for next season, right? I think he's going to be our shortstop.
I think he's given them every reason in the world to do it.
Yeah, especially since he doesn't look completely lost at the plate anymore. You know, he looks like he has a plan when he's up there, like most of the time now, and he's starting to hit with more confidence, hit with more authority, and he plays a great shortstop, and he's got a laser for an arm.
Oh, defensively, he's just incredible. I love watching him.
He's a joy.
I think maybe he has to take a page from Josh Naylor's book. Did you guys see that Josh Naylor, in preparation for coming back, said that he was taking batting practice from a high-speed pitch machine and moving closer to it than what he actually had to stand? So he has to find like a pitching machine that simulates the best left-handed pitcher ever and stand like 60 feet away from it. And just do that for a few months. That's it.
He needs to do that. And then he needs to like work out with Charlie Morton, who throws that really high spin curve ball, because that is the one thing with righties that does still get him. He'll swing and miss in the zone on spin.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, there you go.
I'm watching the at bat right now and I'm like, oh, dear.
It's nice to know what to work on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll take 230, 240 if he hits 25 to 30 bombs. I'll be perfectly fine with that.
I mean,
I'll take it with 15 to 20 with the defense he has, honestly. Yeah, it's really good defense. At least it should be on paper over a season.
Honestly, if Arias can get up to 100 WRC plus and then, like Mike said, gets to 15 to 20 home runs, that's an incredibly valuable player. I'd be excited about that.
I mean, he's got 10 and 300 plate appearances this year, so
there's the pace.
Yeah.
And Bo's got what, not eight or nine in less than that?
Yeah.
Runners on. Did you guys get to the end of the RS?
Yeah, we're at the end. Yeah.
But he hit the ball 100 miles an hour. He just hit it on the ground. He's got to go to the launch angle school a little bit too.
Yeah, go talk to Josh Bell.
Yeah. He's cooled off a little bit.
Yeah, he's a really streaky hitter too. He was going to have a hot one.
Yeah.
So another thing, Juan Brito is up now in Columbus, so we get a chance to see him in Columbus a little bit. First thing he did was take a walk, so that's what he does. I imagine next thing we know, he'll be pulling a ball out of the left field corner, which those are the two things that he does. Reminds me of some good players who've come through Cleveland as far as infielders go, of guys that can take walks and guys that can pull the ball. So that's a good thing. Mm-hmm.
Yep, there's one comp at the plate that a lot of people are probably gonna reach for. It doesn't extend to the dish, unfortunately, but it doesn't extend to the field, unfortunately, because the guy we're all thinking about with this profile could actually, he also played left field at a point in time. So probably will be a pathway to playing time for Juan Brito as well, or at least it could be. I think he's really exciting. I think that he's someone that might change your plans on the infield, might make you think about Andrés Giménez at shortstop, who Andrés Giménez is the most valuable second baseman in baseball. So he'll be good for you at shortstop, but what do you do with Arias? How often do you DH Ramirez? Questions, but you want to answer them with, we need this bat in the lineup.
Yeah. I think, I do think it becomes easier if you see Arias, of course, play well at the beginning of the year. Then you start saying, okay, Juan, go over, play some left field so that when you come up, you can play some second base, you can play some left field, you can DH if we need you to, and then, you know, you can get Arias in at third base for Jose when he needs to stay off and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think they can make it work. Switch hitter, that'll be nice. I haven't looked at his splits in a bit. When I looked originally, they were fairly even, but I haven't looked at his splits in a little bit. Not obviously too concerned about that. But anyway, all right, well, there's some news going on. How are our various goals going? I know Jose's closing in on my 25 for 25, 25 and 25, so that's good. He's showing what he's capable of there, and everybody, you know, we're losing to the Royals, but I don't feel like things are terrible. Like things seem pretty nice for the end of the season. You think they're going to do something the last series that they have at home for Tito?
That would be like a, for sure.
You think so?
I think that would be like the final, oh, we're actually doing this now, because they still haven't made anything official, but I mean, he's all but said it. So yeah.
The question is, does Tito want that?
No, want the it. Answer is no. He's on the record for no.
If he doesn't want that, then I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to get his permission to do anything at the stadium. But I could see them like begging him to. But if Tito is really adamantly against, you know, any like any sort of tribute, then I don't see them going against his wishes, especially if next Tuesday, Wednesday are his last games in Cleveland.
Yeah. That certainly is true. I'm sure they. I guess what I would say is I'm confident they're not going to do any sort of, hey, Tito's retiring. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they'd be more likely to do something like, let's just have a moment of appreciation for Tito. Here's an accomplishment that happened this past year, and we just really like him. I could see them doing something like that, and then everybody knows what it's about, but it's not really retirement. That's kind of what I foresee. Yeah, well,
now if he does retire, does he come back and throw out the first pitch at the home opener?
I don't think he'll throw out the first pitch, but he'll be around.
He'll be probably a consultant or something.
Mike, you wanted
as much as
go ahead. Sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say you wanted to talk about the possibility of Bob Melvin, Bowman.
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys got that big money subscription to The Athletic like I do. I'm over Scrooge McDuck with my ducats, paying for The Athletic $1 a month special. So today we had a story from Ken Rosenthal about, and Tim Britton, I think it was, Dennis Lynn, about the Padres culture and how it's all falling apart and how AJ Preller works people too hard and all their coaches are leaving. There were multiple paragraphs that talked about how uncomfortable and how unsalvageable Bob Melvin's relationship was with Mr. AJ Preller. So Bob Melvin, pretty experienced manager, pretty good manager, managed for a small market team. I kind of think there might be some inclination to get into the game on that side of things once more with a little bit more of a laissez-faire ownership and front office that lets the manager manage. I think there's a little bit of a natural continuity to that. But I also think this is like the first opportunity that the organization's had to hire somebody So even just listening to him would be good. I'd like to see him interviewed, regardless of what happens. But I think there could be a fit. What do you guys think?
I agree wholeheartedly. When I saw that article too, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking the same thing you were.
I think it's fascinating because I could see things going in two directions. I could see them saying, we have a young roster and it'd be nice to have a younger manager who can maybe kind of grow up with the team, a guy that we like a lot, like we've talked about with the Will Venable type. Doesn't have to be Will Venable, but a Will Venable type. And then I could see them saying, well, it's a young roster, so we need a real steady hand at the helm who's proven. And then if that's the case, if that's what they want, then Bob Melvin would be about tops on my list. Honestly, I really think he's a great manager, and I think I've heard players just rave about him. So I can understand that AJ Preller is probably difficult to deal with. So I think if that's the direction they want to go, then I'd be all for it. And I can't sit here and say which way I think it should go. Like, I guess just sitting here, I would probably go a little bit lower. And if I could find someone who is bilingual, I think that'd be cool. But I also certainly don't estimate what the experience of a guy like Bob Melvin brings into it. And I have a feeling a lot of these guys probably speak a good amount of Spanish at this point anyway, even if they're not quite bilingual. They probably know how to get their point across as need be. So that's my kind of thoughts about it.
I just had a random thought based on something I saw earlier today. I saw someone, I don't know how credible this is. I said that David Ross may be out in Chicago.
Why? That's only if they don't make the playoffs. I think that was the stip. But
yeah, That got me thinking. Would that be an option? He is on the younger side when it comes to managers, and he seems to be well liked.
I can't stand to watch David Frost.
That's ridiculous.
David Ross do anything. I can't.
Well, David Ross could bring Mike Napoli. Mike Napoli could also come without David.
I just can't look at him. I can't look at him.
No.
Every time I see him, I have NOM flashbacks basically to hitting a home run off of Andrew Miller. Yeah, I don't know, but anybody could be consideration. I think, you know, one thing, Mike, that I would say might be the best thing about a Bob Melvin is that there might be a slight concern as to how, I don't know if they care about this at all in the front office, but there might be a slight concern about how a fan base is going to react to Tito's replacement. Like if people are just going to be kind of opposed to a new young manager. I don't know if they care about that whatsoever. I don't think they really should. But if you get somebody who's more proven and who has that kind of experience, it's maybe a little easier to say, oh, you know, Tito's gone, but we have somebody who's real proven and has won games before and is a proven manager. The media would handle that well. I mean, like, your stupid ESPN Cleveland people are going to be like, well, Volleyball, what does he know? But they might be like, oh, Bob Melvin. Okay, I've heard that name before. That was my
at least they know the name, right? They won't know what like his money against the cap will be, but like they can figure that out.
They are oh my goodness. Just stick to football, guys. I take it back.
Don't talk about anything, actually, please.
Well, if they talk about football, I don't want to care. I don't need to listen or hear about it because I know where I don't need to listen to it, but
we're up to 9 homers for Bill Naylor. Spoiler alert.
My goodness.
That was such a spoiler, but I love it. That's my favorite spoiler.
That's my song.
102 miles an hour, 400 feet.
Wow. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, I got to ignore you guys for a second. More important things are happening.
Yeah, they're making it a game. 7-6 now. 7-6. So.
There it is.
Basketball down and in. Crushed it.
Yeah.
According to Game Day, that pitch was right on the inside corner.
Yep. It was further in than that. It looked further in.
Like an edge, like the edge.
Oh geez, yeah, borderline. Borderline there.
Did you say that was off the lefty?
It was almost like
no, righty, Carlos Hernandez.
Okay.
But a guy who throws real hard, so
yeah, that pitch was 99.
Yeah.
Throw a fastball into a lefty. That's not a good idea.
That is
not that lefty. Lefty.
That is a tough pitch to hit, though. I mean, 99 miles an hour on the borderline.
Swing and it still went that far.
Yeah.
It was he a has little
Naylor on his jersey. He hits well.
Yeah, he can hit the. He's got good bat speed, man. He's got good bat speed.
He's just good. He's just a good player.
Good at baseball.
Why can't we find one of these for the outfield?
Listen. Right. Listen.
We can did. Find him we for the infield. We just get, our outfield is like under I know that like J.K. Rowling is justifiably cursed. I mean, canceled. But I'm just want to say that just like the old Defense of the Dark Arts position at Hogwarts, the outfield is cursed. Ever since Michael Brantley left, he left a curse on the outfield.
Hear me out. The A's had this really interesting shortstop prospect that we could probably convert to a corner outfielder. Why don't we trade for him, and then put him in the corner.
Few years away though, but yeah, I'm in on that. I'm in on that.
We brother when there's a play at the plate.
The problem with all these shortstop prospects is they don't hit enough to be an outfielder though, most of them. Maybe Juan Brito.
Yeah, the only one that does is Brito.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. That's what everybody keeps telling me. And well-meaning people keep replying to me saying, well, maybe Arias can be our right fielder. Maybe he can be the right fielder. And I'm like, he doesn't quite hit enough to be a right fielder, but his glove makes it so that he can be a shortstop.
We also
it's hard to explain.
Haven't put him there since Rosario was traded. I feel like that if that was a possibility, there would be a game here or there.
It just as Mike is gesticulating, it just doesn't make sense to play him in right field because he is a huge asset on the infield. Like he even if you play him at first base, he's a huge asset compared to right field. Anyway,
he's the best shortstop on the team. Stop putting him in the outfield, please. Right.
Yeah, saying that speaking to the Guardians right field, and to Guardians fans. Yes, yes, Andrew.
Chase DeLauder could be our right fielder.
Yeah, and like July at the rate he's going.
He's crushing double A right now, isn't he?
Well, they're not playing anymore, but he was doing pretty well. He was batting over 300.
Of course he was.
Lots of singles. I'm hoping he'll lift the ball more as he goes. He's hitting the ball hard just on a line.
I feel if he wants to finish the swing, he may get some more lift.
So that's the thing, right? It's so unique that if you start playing with pieces parts, you don't know what you're going to get up back into that. So, like, I don't know. Like, let it go until it's broken. And when it's broken, try to rebuild it. But, like, until then, leave it alone.
Yeah. It is so weird. It's so weird, that swing. I was saying that I went to the last Rubber Ducks game, and I was excited to see DeLauder hit. We're getting towards that part of the lineup where he's going to hit, and I'm there with my two children, and Elliot says, I need to poop. So I was in the bathroom while DeLauder was hitting. But I did see him hit the second time around, so that was something. And at that point, I decided I was going to take him home because it was a preschool night. But Rubber Ducks always do a good job. They have fun stuff for kids to do, so...
So my thing with DeLauder at high A, it kind of felt like he was bored sometimes and he was chasing pitches to see if he could hit them on occasion. So he had 22 strikeouts to 10 walks at the level, and most of those strikeouts were in his first couple weeks there. As he kind of found the top of the zone, he stopped chasing that pitch. He started walking a little bit. And now he played six games at Akron and had five walks, three strikeouts. So I don't think the eye is a problem. I just think he was going for it. I wouldn't worry about that in the future.
And he had, 500 his first 2 weeks?
I think his first month, he batted 381, something like that. It was insane. He was over – oh, no, it was 481. It was like near 500 for a month.
I need to make a public service announcement. If you throw 99 miles an hour, don't throw it down the middle to Jose Ramirez. So
that's right.
Just making a general note to anybody who wants to know that. If you do, he will hit it 105 miles an hour.
Who is MacArthur? Are we in the Korean War? James MacArthur?
What are you talking about?
He got the save last night.
It could be the song MacArthur Park. I don't know.
Sorry, I got distracted by whoever the Royals just brought in.
Oh, James MacArthur. I think he's like a motivational speaker, isn't he? Isn't there a James MacArthur that's a motivational speaker?
Is there a singer? I think there's a singer.
The Royals would absolutely hire a motivational speaker to pitch for them, for sure.
Dayton Moore would have.
Yeah, Dayton Moore. I was still hoping that the White Sox would hire Dayton Moore. That would have been.
Is he still in the organization? I think Getz kept him as the assistant GM.
He is. The fact that Dayton Moore and Ned Yost won a World Series, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and just have a cold sweat about that. Like, that should never have happened.
They went to two
and won one. I know. Like, seriously, guys, I don't know if Mike or Greg or Allie or Andrew, if you guys agree with this, but Ned Yost is the worst manager I think I've ever seen. Like, he just made terrible decisions, and his team won a World Series, and went to two, like Mike says, which just reminds me that this next hire isn't really that important. It's probably just about finding a person that the players will like, because you can be as dumb as a box of rocks and win a World Series. So.
I mean, truly, I think the worst manager in baseball right now is Bud Black, and he's been around forever, so...
Yeah,
the worst manager ever to win a World Series was Bob Brindley.
Ozzie Guillen won a World Series too.
Ozzie had spirit.
Ozzie didn't leave out Byung-Young Kim for three innings after giving up the game tying homer, only to give it up to Derek Jeter and then bring him out the next night, and then do it again.
I was
younger then. Analytics were like a little less, you know, it was very much throw the guy out there. But even then I was like, what are we doing? He threw three innings last night.
it's the atutification of the bullpen in the playoffs. Where I think Tito wanted to pitch Brian Shaw four innings every game, so.
But getting back to the original question. He was really bad, yes. But I loved watching that Royals team. Like I was saying to people last year's Guardians team reminded me of that Royals team. That Royals team, one of my favorite plays ever was the play where the Royals tied it in game five, where, yes, I know we all hate Eric Hosmer, but on that ground out, he took off and made them make the throw, and they didn't make the play. Aggressive base running. I loved it. They ran, they caught everything. Great defensive team, killer bullpen. Loved it.
Killer bullpen for sure. That bullpen was something else. That bullpen was
an accident. That's what happens when you can't develop starting pitching and you just put them all in the bullpen. It's brilliant. Wade Davis, bullpen. Luke Koshiver, bullpen. Go.
Kelvin Guerrero, bullpen.
Greg Holland, bullpen.
Bullpen.
Well, guys, I'm going to let you go because now I need to go to my Calhounism service. I need Cole Calhoun to come through, so I'm going to need to go light a few candles, maybe sacrifice a burrito or something. I don't know what you sacrificed to make Cole Calhoun happy.
I think you sacrificed like a year of your IRA in investment.
So, hey, well, appreciate you guys. Looking forward to our wrap up of the season one next week. Enjoy the rest of the game. Thanks.
This has been the Cleveland Guardians Fancast. You can find us on any major podcast platform. Please remember to like, subscribe, download, rate, and review. Thank you for listening.